SEC fans, this is John Crist from Saturday Down South. Welcome to another installment of the SDS podcast, coming to you from the WDAE studio in Tampa. Our guest for this episode is Chris Brooks. He's a host on ESPN Radio 105.9 in Jackson, Mississippi. Plus, he's the publisher of Mississippi Gridiron Magazine. Not only can he cover the Rebels and the Bulldogs, but junior college and even high school football in the Magnolia State as well. You can follow him on Twitter at MS Gridiron. Chris, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, John, anytime. The high school football might be a little more uplifting, but the college is certainly entertaining.
Yeah, the preps guys aren't quite as salacious as what's going on at the collegiate level right now. So let's go ahead and roll into what's happening in Oxford. Shortly before we actually recorded this show was the breaking news from Coach Freeze. He finally speaks to USA Today, and it's all God is good, and it's all I'm going to watch my girls play volleyball, and good times and bad, I'm going to hang out with my pastor, and everything is just peachy clean. So clearly he is sticking to this message that he is a man of God, and he's not the type of guy accused of some of the things he's accused of on and off the record. Just your reaction to the latest from Coach Freeze as it finally hit the airwaves.
Well, John, the first thing I thought when I see it, and look, I'm coming from an angle, I want to see him say the right thing. And all he has to say is, I'm sorry, in that situation first. But you're reading his first public comments, and you're hoping something good's going to come out of it, maybe some remorse. And I know that we have a lot of legal things going on, so I understand. Yeah, not trying to say too much, but it's not that hard just to drop those two words in there. So as soon as I saw that, immediately, you know, Ole Miss fans aren't going to receive that very well. And if you just kind of looked around Twitter immediately after that came out, that was exactly the reaction that they had. Volleyball matches, and like you said, the faith part of this, and you know, it becomes difficult for me to talk about some aspects of it, because professionally you have to talk about his personal life as it relates to the job that he had. Personally, you don't want to, you know, rip anyone, but you want their actions to match up with what they're saying. But first thing, when I saw that, I was hoping to open it up and some type message to fans, and completely went over his head.
Yeah, the great coincidence here is that you sound like Houston Nutt when you say that. I think a lot of this never even happens and doesn't mushroom the way it has if he just says, I'm sorry, to Coach Nutt. He hasn't learned a lesson yet, which is incredible to me. He's just putting up this facade, and I'm guessing fewer and fewer people are buying it, whether they wear cardinal red and navy blue or not.
Yeah, well, you know how Mississippi is, okay? This is, the rivalry here is intense between Ole Miss and State. But if there's anything, at least lately, that seems to unify them, it's Ole Miss fans and even media, if you read the stuff they put out. There's not any defense of Hugh. If anything, other things, if, you know, they're starting to come out. The relationship the media had with him the last year, the last couple of years. And look, maybe there's other things that come out from all of this soon. I would say for sure that stuff's going to happen. There'll be something else. But all it takes is just, I'm sorry, just an admission of something there. And you mentioned Houston Nutt. You know, when you look back through this whole saga, and John, at this point, it's almost like you're cramming for a test. I mean, it's so much subject matter. From a first NOA to an amended NOA to an Ole Miss response and an NCAA response, and then they are dragging the rival school into this with them and Mississippi State and lawsuits on top of it. It's hard to stay on top of any of this stuff with any knowledge of it. But when you look at the actual steps that have been taken that have gotten them in trouble, they've been simple steps. I mean, like you just said, and I'm sorry, or, you know, we should not have made phone calls to media right before signing day, and maybe we went about that wrong, but there has not been any backup, and there wasn't any backup in that interview with Hugh today.
So it is very ugly for Coach Freeze, and there's a lot of innuendo out there. Now, I'm not here to confirm or deny anything, but some of the stories surrounding this man's personal life outside of the one phone call we know about, I mean, look, they did a little digging at the athletic department, and it didn't take him very long to find a lot of things they didn't like. So just how much uglier could this get, and how quickly could that actually happen?
Well, I don't want to give the rumors credibility because some of them are salacious isn't even the word.
Perfectly fair.
But at the same time, I did not think you would find a call to an escort service on a school phone. So at this point, there's nothing that shocks me. But the things that you are hearing, and of course, Ole Miss has said that they're not going to release the phone records that they went into whenever they terminated him. You got to think at some point all of those things come out. I can't imagine that remains a secret. I think they likely know that too. They're just maybe not willing to deal with it right now. But when you have that much money left on your contract and they feel comfortable to terminate all of the money and a remainder of the years there, you got to think whatever they found was substantial. I will say it like this, John. I know several of the guys that cover that beat. I know the guys that are on the opposition that cover the rival school and know many of them well. Yeah, there's definitely plenty of rumors out there of things that are coming out. Nobody's spoken anything on the record yet, so I'm certainly not going to be the first, but won't be shocked if we're dealing with another story sometime next week.
Now, how much worse is this? Understand, let me let you know ahead of time, I'm not a man of faith. I'm just not. How much worse is this story because of the way Coach Freeze has gone about this business? And I hate to bring in another name, but let's just say for the sake of argument that this entire episode happened with Brett Bielema at Arkansas. He's married. He's a fresh father just a couple of weeks ago, I believe. If this had been him and not a guy who shows up at press conferences with his Bible in his hand and puts, you know, verses and psalms out there on Twitter, is this as explosive as a story or is the whole hypocritical angle make it so much worse than maybe it could have been?
Oh, it makes it worse. And I think fairly. OK, and let me say that because I am a person of faith. But when you're that out front with it and you know that there is extra attention drawn to you and your actions. Because if you're going to speak on those things, and I'll give Hugh credit for this, I've never heard him take the pulpit whenever he's in front of the podium and be self-righteous with it. I mean, the problem he's had here, and this is you especially hear this from rival media that maybe had the ability to be a little more open in their comments. When he uses some of this stuff for recruiting purposes, and even if you were a fan of Ole Miss, you know, somewhere along the way, it just started to feel like that. I mean, that draws in added scrutiny, and I think it should draw in added scrutiny. You know, there are other coaches out there that are people of faith. And look, and I hope Hugh is genuine. I really do. I hope he is just a flawed person that made major mistakes, and I hope we get to the end of that, and that's the story. But the other guys, they seem to be a little more cautious in how much they put it out there. But look, that's the risk. You know, I was asked on a show here, did an interview last week, and we're talking about reclamation guys out there. You know, what's the future for Hugh Freeze? You know, there are guys out there that have gone through scandals or, you know, whatnot, and they found other jobs, and Bobby Petrino's name is going to come up.
Scandals worse than this one, and of course, Petrino's the first guy who comes to mind.
But, John, he never espoused stuff like this.
That's correct.
He did not have the faith aspect of it. That there's no doubt that adds another level or two or three of scrutiny to it.
All right, so let's try to spin this to actual football. I know this story gets tiresome, and fans just want to talk about what happens on the gridiron. And let's move forward here. Tell me more about Matt Luke. I'll be honest. I mean, I didn't know this guy's name very well until last week when all of a sudden he's the interim coach. You know, he's a lifelong assistant. I know he has incredible ties locally. Himself, generationally, his wife is from the area, so clearly he bleeds for the Rebel Nation, and that's something that maybe they need right now. But it wasn't that long ago he was a pretty anonymous offensive line coach, and now he's got a big job at a big program. Just tell me what you know about this guy. Is he strictly there to steer the ship for a little bit, or is he potentially on the radar to get another job elsewhere? And now maybe he can take this job and have a Dabo Swinney type of end to this story.
Well, he's definitely anonymous. You know, like a lot of assistants in this league, he's deserving of a shot. I mean, South Carolina tried to sign him away or hire him away rather from Ole Miss last year. He turned down big money there. I want to say 3 years, $700-$750 a year to go be part of the South Carolina staff, and he decided to stay. So people around the league know him. He's around 40. I know Matt vaguely to say that, you know, we've had, you know, we've talked before, but we're not friends by any means. That name is probably, John, outside of the Mannings, that might be the second family of football for Ole Miss.
Really?
They go that far back. I mean, his dad was a terrific player there. His brother was the quarterback there in the 80s. Then Matt comes along, and he's there now. He's the head coach. With him ascending to that position, that's how prominent that name is there. It probably is. After the Mannings, if they're not number two, it's really close. So that's the type of bloodline that we're dealing with here. Now, as far as what kind of person he is, what kind of coach he is, if you saw his press conference the other day.
I did.
He barely got through it without crying.
That's true.
I mean, that was true emotion. Look, you've seen more of these press conferences than me, John. When these guys get up there and they say this is their dream job, you roll your eyes at it almost half the time. But that guy, when he breaks down to cry, you can tell this is important to him.
Yeah, I think Bobby Petrino said the Atlanta Falcons was his dream job, too.
Yeah, exactly right. And if you follow his stuff long enough, you become so jaded about so much of it. But that part of him is genuine. So as far as being the person that he is, the place he has in Ole Miss history and the family, all those things are genuine. Now you find out, A, can he coach? And I guess B, you know, what is he coaching against? Because the obstacles in front of him there could easily be too big for any coach to overcome, depending on what happens with the NCAA here in the near future. Trying to keep players there. I think right now they're keeping them, but the things you hear around here, I mean, these guys are being recruited left and right, as you'd expect. And, you know, a lot of them, at least from what I understand, are going to stay. I'd be surprised if somebody leaves at this point. The biggest obstacle he hasn't been head coach before, and you're dealing with a new staff for the most part. Half of these guys as assistants are new, and now you're dealing with players where everybody's kind of looking around at what are the options in case this doesn't go well. So he has to manage to keep everybody focused because there is some talent on that team.
Yes, there is.
2 years ago, this is going to be their sophomore class, was ranked in the top five in the country, including Shea Patterson, which was the top quarterback in the country.
Greg Little, that was a loaded class.
They have especially offensive talent. They are, I would say, upper third SEC offensive talent. Defensively, you saw what they had last year. They were anemic. If they get anything defensively, it could be a decent team, and decent to say you could say 7-8 wins in a typical year, but not without all of these off-the-field distractions. If they can somehow, you know, keep the focus on the field, and I would say he wins 6-7 games, I would not be shocked at all to see him get an opportunity to stay there.
Now, I watched that press conference from start to finish, and I was like you. I actually wrote this in a column this week at Saturday Down South. I was incredibly impressed with his opening comment. He clearly wanted this job. He clearly had the passion for this particular job. It was reminiscent of Ed Orgeron last November in Baton Rouge. However, when they moved on to the Q&A portion of the press conference, I didn't get a very presidential feeling coming from him. It didn't sound like a CEO tends to sound these days in the SEC when you have, say, a Nick Saban at the microphone. I know that's an incredibly unfair comparison, but he seemed more sergeant to me than general. And in a job like that, you've got to be a general. Is that a fair comment at this point, or is it still just way, way too early to know what kind of coach he might be on Saturdays in the fall?
No, I think that's fair. I had the same impression, and like, I'm pulling for him. I hope he does well. But I don't think that reaction from you is over the top. I mean, you look at the circumstances, the situation. I mean, you're talking about somebody, first-time head coach at the school. They probably always dreamed of being the head coach, but the circumstances around that press conference, right? They didn't bring him in a big auditorium and have a pep rally. It wasn't that type thing. He's not very seasoned. You can tell he hasn't been in front of the camera very much. But I did think he was authentic. And, John, from what Ole Miss has gone through here the last few weeks, I mean, so many of their fans bought 100% into Hugh Freeze, not only as a coach, but personally.
Authentic is good right now.
And so that's good. I mean, just coming across as honest was a win for him. You know, but I certainly get where you're saying he doesn't have the experience for what he was up against that day. I thought he was honest. I thought he was genuine. And if the goal was to win over your own fan base, that was a good day for him.
Now, the on-the-field product, he's got Shea Patterson. I love this young man's game. I think his potential is the offensive player of the year in the SEC. Maybe not this season, but before he's done in that uniform. He's got the best offensive line that they've probably had there in a couple of years. Even when Laramie Tunsil was there, at least from left tackle to right tackle, it seems deeper and more experienced. And we know they got tons of pass catchers. Even though Engram is gone, even though Stringfellow is gone, even though Ida Badejo is gone, there's lots of big targets that can catch the ball and make Patterson look really good, even on imperfect throws. I like this offense. I think this team could be sneaky dangerous. They've got absolutely nothing to lose. But do you feel like, are they any closer to surprising people and maybe having a 7-5 run in them? Or are they closer for the wheels falling off and it's 3-9 and really bad?
The variance could be, it could swing wild here.
Absolutely.
Because you have major talent on the offensive side. And look, if there's a tragedy in any of this, it's that all we're talking about are the coaches and the scandals and the NCAA and never mention of the players.
There's a lot of really good players still there.
John, even at SEC Media Days, they haven't even been able to talk about the players for a couple of years. That part of it I do feel is unfortunate for them, but let's look at the possibilities here. You have, especially offensively, defensively, they have to make major strides from last year. I tend to think last year they did have plenty of talent issue. I thought it was more a coaching issue just because I thought that at least that side of the football, NCAA scandal, many of them knew they were out the door, and about halfway through the year it looked like some mailed it in and the players played like that. If they're decent on that side, you look at the offense, where that's where their NFL players are. You have a new offensive coordinator. Who knows what he's going to do? I mean, he was great on a lower level. He's handpicked by Hugh Freeze to come in there. He was comfortable enough with him to give him the offense. And from everything you heard out of Oxford, he would be calling the offense. He would be running it. It's his system. But you don't know what to expect there. So you have a first-time Power 5 offensive coordinator, and with all this talent that he's dealing with, a new head coach, it's there's no way to tell. I mean, they'll be the ultimate, I guess, they're sitting there looking for opportunities to pick off other teams. There's no bowl, so they don't have any ambition towards that. There's no telling what they do on the field this year.
Now, we can't talk about a college football story like this without the impact it's going to have on the recruiting trail. According to 247 Sports, their composite rankings, that's what I always use. The class for 2018 right now, I know it's early. We're a long way from the new early signing period in December, a long way from National Signing Day in February. But the current class is 63rd in the country, dead last in the SEC. The decommitment started rolling in mere hours after the Freeze story broke. Last year, it took a miracle finish just to get to 30th. They were down there at like 50 or so a week before signing day. What is Coach Luke's reputation as a recruiter? That's usually how you get a lot of these jobs in the SEC. Can he rescue this thing early signing period December and National Signing Day in February?
Well, I've covered recruiting here in Mississippi probably 8-9 years now. Okay, so we're getting a topic I know a lot about. Matt is a terrific recruiter. I think Hugh Freeze is an unbelievable recruiter, and you just mentioned what they did last year. Under the circumstances, one of the country's better recruiters, and look, for all whatever faults he has, Hugh Freeze is terrific recruiting in the living rooms with moms. That he's very good at. They managed to barely squeak in a 30 class, and they did that at the wire. I mean, it was really bad up until signing day. So now you have Matt in a different role. He is a really good recruiter. They brought in a ton of offensive line talent. He does a good job in Mississippi. He's connected. People like him. You look at his resume. If Matt has one thing that I think they can sell to their own fan base, they can sell Matt's resume. Because he has worked on the staff of some really big-time head coaches, from David Cutcliffe. He was on staff at Tennessee for a while with Phil Fulmer. I mean, he's been around really good SEC football coaches. Now, I don't know how much it matters who you have in that job recruiting right now, because the climate is so terrible, I don't know if anybody could pull in players. Last year was bad. Right now is awful. If this is the other thing that they're facing now, John, I mean, they don't have a coach. I mean, they have an interim coach. So they're not going to bring in anybody right now. These other schools are getting further and further and further ahead. You have the early signing period this year also working against them. So a lot of these players will be gone almost a couple of months earlier than they typically would. So they have all those factors working against them. It's going to be incredibly hard for this recruiting class to be any better than last year, and I would expect it to be probably significantly worse.
By the way, parenthetically, I used to cover the Chicago Bears, and Brendan Iannabendejo was on that team. I think I accidentally said Iannabendejo earlier in the show. I was trying to talk about Quincy Adebojo. So,
yeah, Adebojo.
Just, yes. I had sort of a flashback moment to my NFL days. All right, Chris, let's move on. Let's get out of Oxford. Let's go to Starkville, and let's talk about Mississippi State. I swear, I wrote a column this week for Saturday Down South, and I feel like Dan Mullen won the offseason in the SEC. And with what happened last week, I just envision him. He's got his Yeezys kicked up on his desk. He's smoking that cigar, and he's just got his hands behind his head, very satisfied right now because he was one of the toasts of Hoover with all the Dak Prescott stuff and the explosion of Nick Fitzgerald and all the talk about him being one of the true quarterback whisperers in the country. If there's anybody who's going to revel in this story and certainly get some of the good news coming his direction almost by accident, it's got to be Coach Mullen. He has to be in a great position right now.
Yeah, Dan and that staff, I'm sure they're reveling right now in what's going on. Like, it's amazing how fast these things change. Even at SEC Media Day, when everybody's looking for some type of content in the summer, he gets up there and he talks about intro music for all of the coaches as they walk out. And that becomes something everybody talks about. I mean, everything he did was viewed favorably. And it's been like that since the Egg Bowl. But you look back a little less than a year ago, they lose to South Alabama early. They struggle through much of the year.
He benched Fitzgerald twice. People forget that.
Yeah. They struggled a lot. And their fans here, I can tell you from radio, their fans were not happy. You had some media here thinking he was coaching for his job early in the season. Now, I thought that was over the top, but there were people that were unhappy. And then you get to the end of the season, Fitzgerald turns into this terrific SEC quarterback. I think the kid has a lot of potential. He's running all over the place the last three, four games of the year. They get to the Egg Bowl. You have the 55-20 whitewashing of Ole Miss. He's in the postgame presser. That's the game. He's out there. He's smoking a cigar.
UT Chattanooga.
UT Chattanooga. And ever since that day, it's been positive for them. And then, really, they haven't even been in the press very much because Ole Miss has stolen all the headlines negatively, and they're just sitting there working. Now, I don't know what kind of team they're going to have this year because it feels like with the number of junior college players they've brought in, this might not be the greatest year. It might not be bad. I would expect similar to Ole Miss. Maybe you're targeting 7 wins. That seems to be pretty common with their fans right now. And people that are trying to look at it objectively, next year, their fans are already talking about next year when Fitzgerald is a senior. But he has a solid team coming back. Life's pretty good for Dan right now at Starkville.
Now, I've been fortunate enough to spend a lot of time around Dak Prescott. I covered him very closely at the scouting combine before he was drafted. I have a good relationship with that agent. I was invited out to Camp Dak at his old high school in Louisiana about a month or so ago. Just how much credit does Dan Mullen deserve for the exploding superstardom of Dak Prescott? Or was he just this uncovered gem, and for some reason he slipped through the fingers of everybody else?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I would say I would lean more towards this uncovered gem that slipped through. But at the same time, Dan has a history of this. You know, he did it with Alex Smith. Now he's still in the NFL. Quality quarterbacks when he was at Florida, and now he's doing it at State. They've had good quarterback play since he's been there, not to the level of what Dak did, but they had solid quarterback play. He's really good with quarterbacks. I mean, there are several coaches out there. I don't know about the quarterback whisperer thing just because there are other guys that have put NFL talent out there. He's in that discussion, though. And I saw some article that came out recently, a press conference Dan was in reference to the Dak effect on their recruiting right now. They feel like the success that Dak is having has directly impacted how they're recruiting. They're top 20 right now. He's really good with quarterbacks. I don't think you'll find anybody that doubts that. You look what he did with Fitzgerald last year. Look, Fitzgerald is an unbelievable athlete, but he is not perfect by any means. I would say in the passing game, he has some pretty big flaws that they're working with, and they managed in year one to put a quarterback out there that was around 3,000 yards total offense, led the league in rushing quarterbacks, and then you expect a huge jump this year. The number of quarterbacks that he's coached, John, and had success with, and then Dak, and then he followed up last year with a first-year guy like Nick Fitzgerald and, again, put up big numbers. You got to give a lot of that credit to Mullen.
It's definitely a growing list. Let's go to the other side of the ball. You know, some of these career coordinators, they bounce around all over the place. But Todd Grantham feels like a really good hire to me. And I'm sort of equating it to the Kevin Steele situation at Auburn. You had Will Muschamp, a one-year coordinator for the Tigers, and this is a guy who didn't really want to be there. He needed a job. He wanted to be a head coach again. He left for South Carolina the first chance he got. Kevin Steele comes in, again, career coordinator. All of a sudden, with basically the same players, Auburn's a lot better on that side of the ball. I feel like Grantham's a very good hire. I don't know really what he has to work with, but coordinator alone, that feels like a step in the right direction for a defense that needs it.
Yeah, he was really good at Georgia. Expectations were very high. I think his last year there before he left, they were getting closer to middle of the pack, and a place like Georgia that's not going to cut it. But he was really good overall. And I think you hit the nail on the head with Louisville. Maybe didn't really want to be there, didn't mesh well with the staff. It's going to be interesting to see how he personally meshes with Dan, because Mullen is very stubborn from the people that you hear that cover that daily on the Daily Beat. He's not easy to work for. He's very demanding. And you get a lot of the same stuff from Grantham. Stubborn guy, very demanding type of coach. But so far, it seems like those two guys actually mesh well. They're similar personalities. I think you'll see those two work well together. Problem is on the field. They had major talent problems last year, especially in the secondary. They lost some cornerbacks in the offseason that transferred out. Kids, I think, might have helped them or at least provided some support on the depth chart. They brought in a lot of junior college talent. But the problem is with these junior colleges here in Mississippi, and look, I attended one for a while. I know a lot of these coaches. I see a ton of these players. There's definitely some type of acclimation period for these guys normally. 4, 5, 6, 7 games before you really start to see them shine as they get used to the speed of the game in the SEC. They're going to be counting on 4 or 5 of these guys on the defensive side to be ready from day one. I don't know if that's realistic, but these are players who are really good that I think have a chance to be NFL-type players. I just don't know if they can be ready right out of the gate. But if the junior college players come in and they impact that program, and at least, let's say, by half the year, they're playing up to speed, I would expect the defense to be better than it was last year. But it all depends on this junior college talent that they brought in.
Yeah, you and I are singing the same tune when it comes to the JUCO kids. If you remember, a year ago was signing day, everyone was raving about Jonathan Kongbo going to Tennessee, and he was going to be a difference maker. And alongside Derek Barnett and Corey Vereen, he didn't do a whole lot. He didn't play a lot. He made almost no impact whatsoever. Even at Alabama, where clearly they don't have problems recruiting, you hear so much about this Isaiah Bugs kid, who's supposed to be the best defensive lineman in JUCO a year ago. I'm not expecting big things from him either. I know it happens every now and then. Jaron Reed is a guy who went from JUCO to Alabama to the second round of the draft, but JUCO can be very hit and miss. But a guy I want to talk about with the Bulldogs is coming off a red shirt, and I don't know what it is. Maybe he just had an incredible spring game, but I'm hearing an awful lot about Cameron Dantzler, a freshman coming off a red shirt, a corner. You talked about the secondary needing a talent upgrade. The myth that this kid is already growing and he hasn't played a college game yet, let us know about him.
Well, they need him to be good. The secondary is not real. There's not a ton of depth there. They need him to be good out of the gate. He's one of those, if you talk to the guys that cover that on a regular basis, Dan closes practices, so they do not get very much access at all. You know, I'm talking with Paul Jones, who covers them regularly for 247.
That's industry standard these days, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, they had 30 minutes of access today, and they probably won't have very much going forward. But they get out there, and they get a little bit. We've talked about him a little bit today. one of those guys instantly jumps out at you. If you talk to the players on the roster, which that's kind of what you're forced to do if you're covering it and you can't see it with your own eyes, you start talking to the players and the other kids are talking each other up. He's a guy everybody's talking up. So you would expect him to have an impact this year. Now, back to your point on the junior colleges, though, you're not wrong. I've seen it happen too much in this state because we have a really good junior college system. Both schools take advantage of it, so they have a lot of these players that come through. Alabama has. You mentioned Jaren Reed. But even with him, his second year was much better.
It took a while.
He goes to the, yeah, just it takes these guys a while. It almost always works like that. Occasionally, you have a guy that comes in there that impacts from the first game, but that is not the norm. And the state has a good defense this year. They need several of those guys to be ready earlier than later, and that's just a crapshoot. There's no way to know.
Now, I know this is not a zero-sum game when it comes to recruiting, but again, just this week, Fabian Franklin is a three-star running back out of the state of Mississippi. He just committed to the Bulldogs. As I have it in terms of the rankings, there are 33 high school kids in the state of Mississippi for this cycle rated three stars or above. Now, most of them are three stars. I think there's only one four-star kid in the whole state and no five stars. But Mississippi State has a pledge from nine of these young men, nine of them, with Franklin being the last. Mississippi is down to two. They've only got two. Clearly, what's happening in Oxford, what's happening in Starkville, very different stories. I have a feeling that by the time we get to December and by the time we get to February, this is going to be even more imbalanced. All the trash going on in Ole Miss right now is only going to help their fiercest rival down the road.
If there's no doubt that it's impacting recruiting here. Typically, no matter how the schools are recruiting out of the state, they're splitting kids in Mississippi. That is almost a yearly occurrence. Occasionally, one will have a year where they are getting the majority, but usually that balances out the next year when the other school gets it. This year, that's not the case. The only bad thing for state is that this is not a particularly good class of kids.
Right.
Now, you mentioned we only have one four-star last year.
There's no Cam Akers out there this year.
No, and there's not a Willie Gay that ended up in Starkville this year who was an incredibly talented kid. Jeffrey Simmons comes through a couple of years ago. Benito Jones starts at Ole Miss as a freshman defensive lineman. This is not that kind of class. So if you're a state fan, you wish this would have been one of those big years that they could have capitalized on. But they definitely have a foothold in what's going on right now. Ole Miss is just, they're still trying to weather the stuff they're dealing with the NCAA and trying to save as much on the recruiting front as they can. But look, it's an uphill battle for them. Now, what's going to happen when we get to signing day? I mean, I don't know. All I know following recruiting in this state, and it's similar to others, if the year matters. If you're struggling in March, April, May, June, July through the summer, it's very hard to make up that much ground the last few months of it. It's usually you can take the early part of this as a gauge of how things are going to end up, except the rarest of occasions when a school is just backloading and they're making a big splash on signing day, but that doesn't happen a lot. Just reading the tea leaves right now, state definitely way out of hair.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that about the state of Mississippi. Hugh Freeze got so much credit, I believe, for that recruiting class of 2013, but yep. Laramie Tunsil was from Florida, and Laquan Treadwell was from the Chicago area, and Atlanta was where Robert Kamdiche was from. They weren't necessarily a homegrown kids, so that battle, it was just sort of a little bit different that year. So, yeah, very interesting topic. I can't let you get out of here without one question that I know a lot of football fans love, and that is Last Chance U, the show right on Netflix. Scuba Mississippi, from what the show tells you, it makes Starkville look like Paris. Just yeah. Tell me, the show is incredibly popular. I admittedly have only watched the first season. I have not gotten to season two yet. I'm still trying to get caught up on Bloodline and things of that nature. But just how accurate is that show for that program, for that town? I'm sure you're quite familiar with it.
Yeah, it's accurate, for better or worse. Okay, I mean, that is junior college football here in Mississippi. I didn't play football in junior college. Actually, I played baseball. But you know all the football guys. I've lived it. I've been through it, seen those guys. That is 100% an accurate depiction of how things happen here in the junior colleges. Small towns, very rural Mississippi. You do have a lot of kids with many that did have the grade issues, or they had character issues for whatever reason at the big-time schools. So you'll have some players coming out of high school that are trying to earn a shot somewhere who were overlooked, mixed with all these kids coming from out of state that had trouble on a big, big-time level and are trying to rehabilitate themselves. It's an incredibly compelling mix. It's rough. I mean, these kids are rough. It takes strong personalities on those coaching staffs to handle that type of player. But the thing I get out of it always, and John, year two is not like year one. The personalities are not quite as strong from the player standpoint. You know, there were a couple of kids in the first season that you miss, that you just don't get some of that in the year two. It was still very good. The thing I always take away from it, though, when you're watching this and you see, like, there were parts of a coach or players listening to the radio and listening to media, and you kind of see how media impacts these players, which all of these kids, we can talk about education, but the truth is many of these kids, if the football does not work out, they're not going to
make it. That's it.
I mean, that is, and it's an ugly truth, but a lot of these kids, that's the truth, that's the true part of it. And you're seeing these kids struggle, and most of them do not make it. Some do, but the majority do not. It's compelling video. I know some of those coaches, all types. I mean, these guys under the spectrum, top and bottom, different personalities. They invest a lot of their time. Look, I'll tell you this, too. These communities of the junior college ranks here in Mississippi, I mean, they are all in. Doesn't get a ton of media coverage here or anything like that. But at least for those towns, it's not high school football, but it is very close.
Chris, thank you again for joining me, and I really hope to return the favor very soon.
No, we will definitely have you on very soon, John. Appreciate the invite.
Absolutely. And thank you for listening to the Saturday Down South podcast. If you like what you heard, you can subscribe on iTunes. Be sure to give the show a rating as well. My name is John Crist, and for all SEC all the time, be sure to visit SaturdayDownSouth.com.